It's Wednesday, and of course, it's time for the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider.
More political fallout involving the axed U.S. attorneys. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez still has a job, at least for now. Democrats want Karl Rove and company to testify under oath. And last night, the president came out swinging.
We will not go along with a partisan fishing expedition aimed at honorable public servants. Initial response by Democrats unfortunately shows some appear more interested in scoring political points than in learning the facts.
NPR's political junkie joins us to give us his spin on the scandal. Plus, Al Gore returns to his old stomping ground to testify before Congress about global warming. Might he plan to stay a little longer, say, another 4 years? Later on, Republican Congressman Zach Womp will join us to say why you should draft actor and former Senator Fred Thompson to run for president. If you have questions about the political war over the fired U.S. attorneys, about the 2008 campaign, or other political news, how about that ad that's on YouTube? Give us a call, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog, npr.org/blogofthenation. And let's bring in Ken Rudin, NPR's political editor and our political junkie. Hey, Ken.
Hi, Neil.
And what did you think of President Bush's statement last night? Does this mean war?
Well, it sure sounds like that. It seems like that neither side is blinking. The president says that Karl Rove and Harriet Myers and other White House officials or former White House officials could have conversations with members of Congress, but not under oath, and no transcript being released, where Patrick Leahy, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, says that's absolutely unacceptable, that they have to be under oath and they have to appear in public.
And, of course, the White House also said lots of documents have come out already. We've provided this material. We're willing to provide them. If you're interested in scoring political points, all right, we'll fight it out on the subpoena questions and executive privilege. But if you want the truth, if you want to find out what actually happened, well, here's our offer.
Right. But the documents that the White House releases, as far as I know, have nothing to do with things coming from the White House. These are internal Justice Department documents regarding the dismissals or the firings of the eight U.S. attorneys and what led up to that. But nothing from the White House itself. And that's what Congress is demanding.
Last weekend, a lot of people, including Chuck Schumer, the Democratic senator from New York, were saying Alberto Gonzalez would be out within the week. Earlier this week, though, President Bush called him to say, you've got my complete support.
Right. He's 1,000% behind Alberto Gonzalez. But, you know, if Gonzalez were to go, and I think the betting on Capitol Hill is that he does not survive this, that would lead to a very ugly confrontation about who replaces him. Of course, you know, you have for the first time in these 6 years, you have Democrats in control of the Senate. Democrats would be in control of the confirmation process. And you know, the list of acceptable nominees that the administration would present would be, I assume, would be pretty short.
Mm-hmm. Here's an email question from John in Tucson, Arizona. If the president continues to refuse to allow Rove and Myers to testify before committees, would the Republican-leaning Supreme Court step in to decide?
Well, it's not a question of stepping in. I think it ultimately would go to the court, and it would go to the Supreme Court. And where it rules then, you know, a lot of people think that it is a Republican Supreme Court, given what happened in 2000, the contentious 2000 presidential election. But ultimately, if President Bush stands his ground and the Democratic Congress stands its ground, as both looks likely to happen, I think the Supreme Court is a likely place it'll wind up.
Mm-hmm. Well, it could end up in the courts, and we'll find out what happens there. There is also this week, getting back to electoral politics, a sort of underground ad. Nobody's taken responsibility for this ad that has popped up on YouTube, YouTube.com. That's the site where a lot of things are posted, including Hillary Clinton's campaign statements and Barack Obama's. But this is sort of an underground ad that portrays Hillary Clinton as a big sister, if you will. It's a parody of that famous Ridley Scott ad that was for Apple and really, I think, against Microsoft. Let's take a listen.
I don't want people who already agree with me. I want honest, experienced, hardworking, patriotic people who want to be part of a team, the American team. I hope you've learned a little bit more about what I'm believing and trying to do and really helped this conversation about our country get started.
I hope to keep this conversation all the way to November 2008.
And the screen is smashed by a sledgehammer thrown by a blonde cutie in a Barack Obama t-shirt.
I love working in radio, but somehow this doesn't translate on radio as well as it should. But what it does show is that the 2008 campaign, for the first time in history, the media are not going to be the ones who are going to determine how this campaign is going to be run. And I dare say the candidates are not going to be able to do it, too. It seems like this underground availability of YouTube or things like that, where people could put anonymous commercials up there. Over a million people have seen this commercial. You have this droning, boring sounding of Hillary Clinton almost hypnotizing all the people listening to her and somebody trying to break free, as you said, 1984 with that Apple commercial. But we saw this with, you know, with George Allen of Virginia, mm-hmm. this disparaging remark he made about a person of color appeared on YouTube and basically doomed his campaign. That was
interestingly, a lot of people are comparing this to the Swift boat ads that were taken out against John Kerry, with the difference is nobody had to identify themselves as to who made it, and nobody had to buy the airtime.
Right, exactly. This is you could do this for a couple of $100s, and the fact that over a million people have seen it have gotten them this more publicity than anybody else. At the end of the ad, it says BarackObama.com, but the Obama campaign said they have had nothing to do with this campaign.
Well, that's the email question from David in Maple Shade, New Jersey. Obama said his campaign had nothing to do with it, but has he condemned the advertisement?
He hasn't. And by the way, there's a follow-up ad that comes up that the exact same robots sitting there, and you hear Barack Obama's voice, and you hear him saying that I am declaring now that the Bears are going to win the Super Bowl, mm-hmm. and then it says don't trust Obama, vote for Hillary Clinton, and nobody takes responsibility for that too. It's guerrilla warfare, but it seems to work given the fact that it has such a wide audience out there.
Mm-hmm. And well, anyway, let's see if we can get some callers on the line. Let's go to Travis. Travis calling us from Kansas City.
Yes, my question is with Bush's statement about good public servants, if they are indeed public servants, don't they need to testify in order to serve the public and be answerable for their service?
This is Karl Rove, who, of course, is a senior White House aide and the president's political advisor. Some call him Bush's brain after that book written about him. Ken?
Well, the argument is that, you know, the fact is, if they are telling the truth, Tony Snow said at a press briefing today, that these people know that it's against the law to lie to Congress. So the follow-up question is, then why won't they be under oath? And he said, well, they don't have to be. The question is, if they are not going to testify under oath, why not? Why? I mean, what are they holding back? And that's the real question, because there's a lot of things that between the White House, with Karl Rove, former counsel Harriet Myers, and the president himself, who may give new light to why these eight U.S. attorneys were fired. Initially, the story was it was a performance question. Then it was something else. But, I mean, the White House and the administration have given so many different varying explanations for why these eight were released. That's why the Congress says, look, we're not getting the truth. Somebody's got to tell us the truth, and they've got to start now.
Well, the reason the White House says Karl Rove and Harriet Myers, the former White House counsel, would not have to testify is the principle of executive privilege, which, of course, was cited famously by Richard Nixon during Watergate and cited, I guess, briefly by Bill Clinton in the Monica Lewinsky affair. Neither of those incidents giving executive privilege a lot of credit politically once you cite it.
Exactly. And of course, because of the we saw in the Nixon thing, they did have to testify ultimately in Watergate. And we saw in Whitewater in the Clinton administration and in campaign finance scandal in the Clinton administration, White House officials, even though President Clinton did declare executive privilege, ultimately they did testify before Congress.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, you're trying to get in there, Travis?
Yeah, there's one problem with that, though. They are either the public servants or the president's servants, and he can't cover them with this grandiose claim that they're the public servants if, in fact, they're actually his servants.
Well,
if they were private people, like lawyers or such, I can understand the attorney-client privilege, but he couldn't come out and say that they're good public servants then.
Well, I think you're choosing your words. They're choosing theirs. It's a semantic battle.
No, but I don't mean to be anti-semantic. But no, Travis makes a very good point in the fact that
yes, you do.
Oh, I'm sorry. In the fact that that it's just like the problem with President Bush naming a close confidant of his, Alberto Gonzalez, to be Attorney General. Does Alberto Gonzalez represent President Bush, or does he represent the United States government? And that's, I think, the dilemma that Gonzalez has found himself in as well.
Travis, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's see if we can go to Mike. And Mike is with us from East Moline in Illinois.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
This is off the topic of what you guys were talking about, but I was just wondering, with no clear front runner for the Republicans in the presidential race. If Vice President Cheney decided to resign, would the Republicans have the right to put somebody into the VP office to groom them for office, or is that something that would have to go through the legislature?
Ken's favorite, the 25th Amendment.
Yes. Well, actually, this similar thing happened in 1973 when Spiro Agnew resigned. He was involved in a corruption case, and Richard Nixon had to come up with a vice president. He really wanted John Connally to be his successor as vice president, but because Connally was seen as a presidential candidate, the Democratic Congress said there's absolutely no way we'll confirm him, and Nixon wound up choosing some congressman by the name of Gerald Ford. The point is that in this unlikely event, this unlikely scenario where Dick Cheney resigned, for President Bush to get a successor vice president approved by a Democratic Congress, he'd have to pick somebody with completely no partisan agenda, no planning for a potential presidential candidacy.
Well, he could be a partisan Republican, but the fact is members of his own party would not want the new vice president to be the candidate presumptive.
Exactly. Like John McCain would not be vice president. Although, you know, in this scenario, you always hear the name Condoleezza Rice thrown out as a potential successor, but this is not going to happen, but I guess it's a fun game to play.
Mm-hmm. Mike, thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, thank you very much.
And we're talking with Ken Rudin, our political junkie. He also writes a column by that name that appears weekly on our website at npr.org. And if you haven't had enough of him, you can go read it, which posted today, Ken?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Soon.
Soon. He'll be done with it soon. Funny, he doesn't treat reporters that way when he edits them. You're listening to The Political Junkie on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And some political news out of the state of Louisiana this week involving the governor of that state.
Yes, Katrina has claimed another victim. And actually, I shouldn't make fun of that because they were a terrible tragedy of what happened to Hurricane Katrina and the people of New Orleans. But it really ultimately ended the career of Kathleen Blanco, the Democratic governor. She was faulted. We always hear the criticism of President Bush, the response to Katrina in 2005. But Kathleen Blanco also took a tremendous amount of criticism. She really did not decide on an evacuation of New Orleans until it was too late. She ordered in buses to evacuate the shelters until it was too late. She really made a lot of decisions too late, and I think the polls showed it. She was 20 points down in the polls against Bobby Jindal, an Indian-American a congressman who narrowly lost to her 4 years ago and was favored to beat her by 20 points. But she said,
Democratic primary.
No.
Oh, he's a Republican. Excuse me. Right? I apologize. And they have the open races there anyway.
That's exactly right. But now what it looks like is going to happen is that John Breaux, the former senator, who's now a Washington, D.C. lobbyist, he's been in D.C. since 2005, looks like he's going to jump into the race and be the Democratic nominee. So this probably is the best news for the Democratic Party because Blanco was not going to win re-election, and certainly John Breaux has a good chance.
And let me ask you also, we were hoping to speak with Congressman Zach Wamp. He's been called onto the floor to testify, and he should be with us shortly. Which is why he's joining us a little late. But this is about the candidacy, or maybe candidacy, of Fred Thompson, former senator from Tennessee, former minority counsel on the Watergate Committee, and now an actor on Law and Order, the television program.
Yes, I mean, you know, the thing about Fred Thompson, you know, he was a successful senator, very popular. You know, you compare the two Tennessee senators at the time. Bill Frist is the guy who said he wanted to be president. He was the least politically savvy person I've ever seen who wanted to be president, whereas Fred Thompson was, you know, happy-go-lucky, a friendly guy, and now it looks like that he may be drafted for a run for the presidency.
Congressman Wamp joins us now by phone from his office in Washington. Thanks for coming off the floor as quickly as you could to be with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for your patience.
And why is Fred Thompson the man for the job?
Well, it's really innate. Some people have it, some people don't. I called him as soon as Senator Frist said he wasn't running for president, and I said, Fred, Bill Bennett once said it's like a dog walking up to a bowl of food. He kind of checks it out, and then you can tell immediately whether he likes it or not. The American people have liked Fred Thompson from the first moment he came on the stage in those Watergate hearings, and then since then, all the way through his several varied careers, he has natural charisma, strength. People trust him because he's so comfortable in his own skin. But he's not, an overly aggressive, certainly not a career politician, and he's very different. And right now people are looking for something different, but in the Republican Party they're looking for somebody that they can count on, that they trust, and that will have some momentum. And right now, our field doesn't seem to be going very far.
Congressman, I was going to ask you that very question. John McCain, Rudy Giuliani, Mitt Romney seem to be ostensibly the three Republican frontrunners, but conservatives have problems with all three.
Well, some people said, is he waiting too late? And I said, no, actually, if you look at the rest of the field, maybe they started too early.
Is he going to run? Is he forming a committee? Is he raising money?
He has obligations that he has to meet. He's still doing Paul Harvey, and actually his border security commentary really got rave reviews this week, and he has to honor his obligations to law and order. My hunch is that if he runs, and that's his decision to make, I think there's a very, very strong possibility he will run, but I think that May is probably the operative month. He's coming here to meet with over 50 members of Congress that have either expressed a desire to support him or to sit down with him and talk with him. That's April the 18th, the first Wednesday the Congress reconvenes after Easter. That's already scheduled, so there's going to be steady progress made towards his decision, I think, in May. I don't think it's too late. He's in 11 million homes every week with law and order. Frankly, there are a lot of people looking for this, and he might be just what the doctor ordered. I just think he has this innate strength.
Congressman, I'm afraid we're out of time. I guess I suppose TNT would oppose this because they'd have to pull all the programs with him on it if he was running for president. But we'll have to see what happens. Thanks very much for being with us. We again thank you for your time and running out to meet us today.
My pleasure.
Congressman Zach Wamp, a Republican for Tennessee, joined us by phone from his office on Capitol Hill. Ken Rudin joined us from his office down the hall here at NPR, where he's NPR's political editor and our political junkie. Ken, as always, thanks very much.
An actor for president?
Never happened. We'll be back next week with another edition of The Political Junkie. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.